Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for July the 2nd, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Tonight on our show we will be discussing some VA news from Washington as well as from around the country. There's a lot going on of interest to veterans, so stay tuned for a fast hour of news and information. But first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, and good evening, everybody. Hope everyone is doing well this evening. I would like to remind our listeners that we are also a call-in show, so you can let us know what is on your mind as far as veteran issues. Our toll-free call-in number, covering the entire United States, is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. So let's hear from our veterans, maybe a family member of a veteran who wants to discuss their current situation, or maybe you want to discuss an issue or a topic that we addressed on prior shows. Or you might hear something tonight that might draw of interest to you and you want to weigh in and how it might affect you, or maybe you want to add something to the topic. So please call us at 1-888-627-6008. And now for news from Washington. This past Thursday, June 28, 2018, U.S. Senators Johnny Isakson, Republican from Georgia, and John Tester, a Democrat from Montana, chairman and ranking member of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, released a statement announcing their support for Robert Wilkie's nomination to be Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Wilkie is a respected, talented nominee for VA Secretary, and I am proud to support his nomination, said Senator Isakson. The Department of Veterans Affairs needs a leader who will help move the VA away from the problems of the past and toward solutions of the future by implementing the legislation we passed to address significant problems that's confronting the department. Mr. Wilkie has the expertise and the positive attitude to take on challenges that lie ahead, and I look forward to working with him to help transform the VA into a department worthy of our veterans and one that is indicative of a nation grateful for their service. Mr. Wilkie committed to putting veterans first, and I'm pleased to support him, added Senator Tester. The VA is navigating rough waters, and I will hold Mr. Wilkie accountable for serving our veterans. As long as he maintains good communication with Chairman Isakson and me, we'll make sure that VA has the tools to right the ship for Montana's and America's veterans. The Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs held a hearing to consider the nomination of Wilkie to be Secretary of the VA on Wednesday, June 27. During the hearing, Wilkie, who served as acting Secretary of the VA from March 28 until Trump formally announced his intention to nominate Wilkie to leave the VA permanently on May 18th, pledged to build on the committee's work and see to it that the VA succeeds in better serving veterans. David, I can add that I've been in touch with certain people that are associated with our law firm, as well as various websites and even the social media, Facebook. And apparently, Mr. Wilkie's nomination is looking pretty good. So, he's getting a lot of support from veterans groups. So hopefully we're going to get someone in there soon so we can start addressing some very serious problems that are affecting our men and women veterans. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. In other news from Washington, D.C., this past Monday, June the 25th, 2018, U.S. House of Representatives passed H.R. 299, the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act of 2018. The bill was then forwarded to the U.S. Senate, where it was referred to the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. Representative Phil Rowe, the chairman of the House Committee, released the following statement after the House passage of the act. and I quote, "I applaud the House's passage of the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act," said Congressman Rowe. "This bill is critical to our Navy's Blue Water Navy veterans, as it ensures they receive benefits for any condition they may have developed as a result of exposure to Agent Orange. This bill has been years in the making, and I am grateful for Representative Palladio's leadership on this issue. I look forward to working with my colleagues in the Senate to get this bill to President Trump's desk and finally provide Blue Water Navy veterans with the benefits they deserve," unquote. Now, Congressman David Palladio, a Republican from California, was the one to introduce the bill. He also issued a press release in which he said, quote, "Everyday veterans call my office asking when this law will be corrected, and I'm grateful to tell them we are one massive step forward in ensuring they receive the medical treatment they deserve," unquote. Congressman Palladio also said, quote, "I look forward to working with the Senate so that our veterans who have given our nation so much receive the health care they have earned," unquote. Over to you, Richard.
Thank you, David. According to the House Veterans Committee press release, Agent Orange and herbicide used during the Vietnam War has been known to be associated with certain health issues in people who have been exposed to the chemical. According to the Agent Orange Act of 1991, if a veteran served in Vietnam between 1962 and 1975 and has a disease that has been associated with exposure to Agent Orange, they are automatically presumed to have been exposed to it and therefore qualify for disability compensation. According to the Department of Veteran Affairs, interpretation of this law, only veterans who have set foot on the landmass of Vietnam or served in Vietnam's inland waterways, known as brown water veterans, qualify for the presumption of exposure to Agent Orange. This does not include Blue Water Navy veterans who served on ships off the coast. The Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act would extend the presumption of exposure to Agent Orange to veterans who served in the Blue Water Navy. David, I know you and I have represented a number of veterans who have come under that Blue Water Navy category, and it's interesting to hear, you know, their factual account of their service and when they'd be on these ships and all of the helicopters coming back from Vietnam, and clearly they had Agent Orange coming out of these helicopters, on these helicopters. So basically, you know, the men and women who were serving on these ships knew that this substance was on their ship. So maybe this will finally right the ship and get these Blue Water veterans the compensation they need. What do you think, David?
Well, it's certainly pushing things to probably the final limit of Agent Orange exposure. There are other viewpoints that, you know, some of the Vietnam veterans don't want to hear, but, you know, as far as, you know, how convincing is the science and how convincing is the evidence that sailors that might be 12 miles off the coast, for instance, were going to be exposed. But it's been an issue that some veteran groups have been very adamant about supporting, and it looks like it's probably, you know, if it makes it through the Senate, I'm sure President Trump will sign it. But in that same bill, it's interesting that when the bill was in committee during what they call committee markup, the legislation was amended for a significant development for certain veterans who served in Korea. And I'm not talking about between 1950 and 53 during the Korean War, but veterans that served along the militarized zone, the DMZ, between September 1st of 1967 and August 31st of 1971, a period of 4 years, because there is evidence that the military used herbicides to essentially defoliate the ground on and near the DMZ in Korea. So as amended, the legislation will now also extend health care, vocational training, and rehabilitation, and monetary allowance It'll provide the coverage for the veterans that served in the Korean DMZ between that period of time. But also, there was a provision that affects those that served in Thailand and their children. And that provision says that there will be certain benefits for children who are born with spina bifida if at least one of the parents served in Thailand between January 9th of 1962 and May the 7th of 1975. And if the VA determined that at least one of the parents had been exposed to an herbicide agent during that period. And for the bases in Thailand, that exposure would usually be in the form of either service member who was spraying it or who worked close to the perimeter of the military installation where they used the herbicide basically to defoliate, to clear the perimeter of any growth, basically to make it easier to defend against enemy infiltrators, which was a problem. So,
you know, David, the Agent Orange issue is not new to most veterans. It's not new to civilians. Certainly not new to our politicians. If you start doing the math, you realize how old most of these veterans are who are still alive, who may have been exposed to Agent Orange and have issues with it to this day. I still even get some veterans, Vietnam veterans, who clearly should have filed, should clearly have exposure to Agent Orange because they served in Vietnam, and they've got certain disabilities that carry the presumption, and yet never filed a claim, and were told that they couldn't file a claim. But maybe you could summarize for our listeners what and why Agent Orange is a matter of such concern so many decades after the Vietnam War ended.
Well, according to the VA, which for many years fought the idea that Agent Orange had caused harm to service personnel, the position taken by the VA now is that that there is a link, enough of a link to provide benefits. Agent Orange was an herbicide used by the military between 1962 and 75. It was called Agent Orange for the orange band around the storage barrel, although there were other herbicides of other names. And the military sprayed literally millions of gallons of Agent Orange and these other tactical herbicides on trees and vegetation during the Vietnam War. Veterans who may have been exposed to Agent Orange include veterans who were in Vietnam, the Korean Demilitarized Zone, on air bases in Thailand. There's a lot of troops in Thailand were supporting the mission in the Vietnam War, and they were using herbicides, as I said a few moments ago, to defoliate the perimeters of those bases. And the VA has also recognized that those that flew on or worked on C-123 aircraft, which was used to transport the Agent Orange, that they were exposed. So decades later, more studies were done and veterans were reporting problems. There became recognition about the health effects of those chemicals, including dioxin, which is a byproduct of Agent Orange production. The VA offers now a number of things, another number of health and compensation benefits. The VA offers eligible veterans a free Agent Orange registry health exam for possible long-term health problems. Also offers health care, disability compensation, and other benefits to eligible veterans for certain disease conditions, as well as benefits for children of Vietnam veterans who have spina bifida. Dependents and survivors may also be eligible for other benefits, which I'll talk about shortly. But the VA has recognized that certain cancers and other health problems will be treated as presumptive diseases associated with exposure to Agent Orange and other herbicides. And veterans and their survivors may be eligible for benefits for these diseases. Now, the list has changed over the years. It has added more disabilities and cancers over the years as more studies have been done. But I'd like to take a few minutes and go over these so that veterans and our other listeners get a better appreciation of really the many effects of exposure to Agent Orange. So here are the list, and some of these may surprise you. The first is AL amyloidosis, which is a rare disease caused by an abnormal protein that enters tissues or organs. The next on the list is chronic B-cell leukemias, which is a type of cancer which affects white blood cells. Another is a skin condition called chloracne, or similar acneiform diseases, which occurs soon after exposure to chemicals and looks similar to forms of acne that you typically see on a teenager. Under VA rating regulations, it's chloracne to be presumed as being caused by exposure to these herbicides must have been at least 10% disabling within 1 year of exposure to the herbicides. Also, and this may surprise you, type 2 diabetes is on the list. That's a disease characterized by high blood sugar levels resulting in from the body's inability to respond properly to insulin. Well, if a veteran served in Vietnam or in one of these other areas that I mentioned earlier, even for just a day and at any point later in life develop type 2 diabetes, then this rather generous presumptive rule will say that the VA will consider it as having been caused by Agent Orange. That, along with ischemic heart disease and prostate cancer, are three that are also, as our listeners I'm sure know, very common for older men, prostate cancer, at least for the men, but ischemic heart disease and type 2 diabetes, for older Americans, it's very common to have those, even if they were never in the military, let alone ever in Vietnam. So it's a rather generous presumption here. Another on the list of Agent Orange presumed diseases is Hodgkin's disease, which is a malignant lymphoma or cancer characterized by the progressive enlargement of the lymph nodes, liver, and spleen, and by progressive anemia. Ischemic heart disease, which I mentioned earlier. A multiple myeloma, which is cancer of plasma cells. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a group of cancers that affect the lymph glands and other lymphatic tissue. And another on the list of Agent Orange presumed diseases is Parkinson's disease, which is the progressive disorder of the nervous system which affects muscle movement. Another is peripheral neuropathy early onset, the early onset form of peripheral neuropathy, which is a nervous system condition which causes numbness, tingling, other motor weaknesses. Now, under the VA's rating schedule, for it to be presumed as caused directly by Agent Orange, it must have been at least 10% disabling within 1 year of the herbicide exposure. Now, I know veterans out there may have heard of cases and maybe even had this happen to them where they have peripheral neuropathy and it wasn't the early onset kind. It wasn't the type that developed within 1 year of herbicide exposure, but it developed maybe even decades later as secondary to diabetes. Well, the VA will also service connect that form of peripheral neuropathy as being secondary to service-connected diabetes. Another on the list of Agent Orange presumed disorders is porphyria cutanea tarda, which is a disorder characterized by liver dysfunction and by the thinning and blistering of the skin and sun-exposed areas. According to the VA, it must be at least 10% disabling within 1 year of exposure for this presumption to kick in. Prostate cancer is another. It's one of the most common cancers among men. Respiratory cancers, including lung cancer, cancers of the lung, larynx, trachea, and bronchus are all included, as well as soft tissue sarcomas, which are a group of different types of cancers in body tissues, such as the muscle, fat, blood, and lymph vessels, as well as connective tissues. So, as you can see, it's a rather long, complicated list, far more than I would expect people to be memorizing as they hear it, but the good thing is the VA has all this on their website for ease of reference. Now, the VA also presumes that certain birth defects in children of Vietnam and Korea veterans are associated with qualifying military service. As far as birth defects in children of women veterans who served in Vietnam, the VA will presume that certain birth defects in the biological children of women veterans was caused by the military service when the birth mother served in Vietnam between February 28th of 61 and May the 7th of 75, and those eligible children may receive VA benefits. The birth defects covered are abnormalities present at birth that resulted in mental or physical disabilities. Now, the VA recognizes a very wide range of birth defects as associated with women veteran service in Vietnam. These diseases are not strictly tied to herbicide exposure or dioxin exposure, but rather to birth mother service in Vietnam, because there have been studies that show some correlation, higher incident of birth defects. In fact, the VA's rule is so broad that basically any birth defect that doesn't have some other known cause in the children of female veterans will be covered. Now, that's the key thing you'd want to emphasize, which is if there's some other known cause for that birth defect, such as you know, family-related disorders or a birth-related injury or some other fetal or neonatal infirmity that has some other well-established cause, then those aren't going to be covered. In other words, that evidence would essentially successfully rebut any presumption that that birth defect was caused by Agent Orange exposure. So it's rather complicated, but the main point is that the children of women Vietnam veterans, if they were born with any birth defects, that's the term used by the VA, then they ought to look into whether Agent Orange might be the cause. It may get a bit more complicated medically, but the list of recognized birth defects, and it's not even an exhaustive list, is very extensive. So you may be asking yourself, what are the VA benefits for children with covered birth defects, and who actually are covered? As I said earlier, they include biological children of women Vietnam veterans who served between February 61 and May 7th of 75. And they were conceived after the date in which the veteran first entered the Republic of Vietnam. And if they have a covered birth defect, was resulted in either permanent physical or mental disability, then they may be eligible for VA benefits. I wanted to emphasize that because that's an area that doesn't receive a whole lot of publicity. So, Richard, any thoughts, comments?
Well, that was a great, exhausted summary of Agent Orange. I want to remind our listeners that if you missed any of David's very well done summary, that you can go to our archives. All our shows are archived at bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour and press 1, and you can go back and hear David's what I would like to say very professorial summary of Agent Orange, and share it with your other, you know, if you know veterans out there who may have been exposed, who served in Vietnam and were exposed to Agent Orange and maybe are not receiving the benefits from the VA that they should. Tell them to go to our radio show, again, bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour, and give it a listen. And on that, I also like to remind our listeners that you can call into our show if you want to talk more about Agent Orange. Go to 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. David, you know what I find amazing is here it is 40 years later, and you know, we're still having to explain Agent Orange, having to sign, file claims for veterans who clearly are entitled to it under the presumptive Agent Orange policy. And so it's just amazing. And on that note, you know, we've got other issues that are coming up, the Camp Lejeune issue and now the burn pit issue. And you know, we saw with the Camp Lejeune, that took, you know, almost 20 years for the government to finally get around and do something positive for our vets. You know, Agent Orange took a long time, and Camp Lejeune, and now we got the burn pits. And is that going to take 20 more years? You know, I hope not. But anyway, you know, as a result, I'm sorry, regarding the water, the Camp Lejeune situation, I wanted to remind our listeners about the water contamination that occurred at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, between August 1953 and December 1987. This, of course, involved the environmental contamination in the water system that exposed these men and women who were at Camp Lejeune during that period of time, again, 1953 to 1987, and who now have certain cancers. The story behind that was about how the Ensminger Act finally got passed. David, can you tell us some more details about what's going on with the latest on the Camp Lejeune water contamination?
Sure. Yeah, we've had you know, a number of guests over the last few months about Camp Lejeune, but it's an important topic, and things are still continuing to, and I expect will continue to evolve in upcoming years. There's been more and more attention to the Lejeune issue, but what's also remarkable about the Camp Lejeune water contamination issue is that there's so much attention to Camp Lejeune, and yet there are dozens, if not even hundreds, of other military installations that have had contamination, environmental contamination issues. It's just that Lejeune received the most attention for a number of reasons. not every installation. Go ahead.
I think Mike Partain was on our show one time, and he mentioned there were 109 other Camp Lejeune-based situations around the country.
Well, there's a lot, it's probably more. It's probably more than 109, but they've not received the same attention. We had a guest, Gavin Smith, about a year ago, who talked about his organization called Civilian Exposure, and his organization and his website documents pollution problems at many other installations beyond Camp Lejeune. Just that the difference is, with all the attention given to Camp Lejeune over the last decade, it's been on the forefront of attention by Congress as well as the VA. So what does that bring us to? It brings us to the point where there is now official government recognition that there was contaminated drinking water. It was water used not just for drinking, but for washing and bathing at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And they figure the period of contamination was between August of 1953 and December of 1987, a period of over 34 years. So after a lot of fighting between veteran groups and the VA, and with some involved by Congress, basically here's what the rule is. If you served at Camp Lejeune, Marine Corps Air Station, New River in North Carolina, you may have had contact with these contaminants in the drinking water. There's scientific and medical evidence that has shown an association between exposure, these contaminants, and the development of certain diseases even years later. So the rule is, if you have a qualifying service at Camp Lejeune, you're probably asking yourself, what's that lawyer mean by qualifying service? I'll get to that in a minute. And a current diagnosis of one of the conditions listed in the regulations, you may be able to get disability benefits from the VA. So what does that mean? What's qualifying service? Under the regulations, if you served at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River for at least 30 cumulative days, that's 30 cumulative or total days. They don't have to be consecutive. In other words, you could have served 15 days, left, come back, served another 15 days. As long as you had at least 30 cumulative days between that window of time of August of 1953, which is just might give you some historical comparison. That was the time of the end of the Korean War in 1953. And then December of 1987, which was almost the end of the Cold War, if you were in that 34-year window and you weren't discharged for dishonorable reasons and you were diagnosed with one or more of the following eight conditions, then they will pay you disability compensation. Now, what are the eight conditions on this list? They include adult leukemia. They include aplastic anemia and other myelodysplastic syndromes. Urinary bladder cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and Parkinson's disease. So those eight are on the list. And this list is published in the Code of Federal Regulations. It was finalized in 2017. Who's covered? Those who are on active duty. You could have been in the reserves or guard as well, as long as you met that threshold of 30 or more days at Camp Lejeune. And you'll be eligible for health care from the VA as well as disability compensation. And one thing that I mentioned previously, which a lot of people, even people that are relatively knowledgeable about this rule, don't realize is it is a rebuttable presumption. So when I say that, let's say if you develop Parkinson's disease, or you develop urinary bladder cancer, or you develop liver cancer, kidney cancer, or adult leukemia, or one of these others on this list, it's theoretically possible that the VA might look at your medical history and look at other circumstances, other things in your life, maybe other exposures that you've had in your life or other causes, and say that in your particular case, there's medical evidence to successfully rebut the presumption that it was caused from Camp Lejeune. How aggressive is the VA going to be? Time will tell, because as I say, this list it was published in early 2017 and effective in March of 2017. It's really not been in the law all that long, but it is important that people recognize that it is a rebuttable presumption. And so it is possible the VA might say in a veteran's particular case that it's not due. Now, another thing that's due to Camp Lejeune. Now, another thing that's interesting about it is that, and Rick, we've had this question before, what about health care? Because what I've just been talking about has been where the VA will pay disability compensation to the service member. And they'll see what the diagnosis is. If it matches one of the eight conditions on that list, then they'll evaluate the severity of it and then attach a numerical rating, anywhere from 0 to 100, depending on what the condition is, and then pay disability compensation according to that rating. What about health care benefits, though? Veterans and their family members, are they covered for health care because of this exposure to contaminated water in Lejeune? The answer is yes. Again, we're looking at the same window of time, August of 53 through December of 1987, then veterans and their family members can get health care benefits. What's really interesting about this is that this entitlement to health care benefits was based on a statute passed by Congress as opposed to a regulation which was enacted through the regulatory process by the VA for those eight conditions I just talked about. These 15 conditions were based on the 2012 law and those 15 obviously include conditions which are not on the other list, the shorter list. And we had Jerry Ensminger on our show couple months back. He surprised me, may have surprised some of our listeners, by saying near the end of the interview, when I asked him, I said, well, what's with the deal? Why were there 15 on the list passed by Congress and only 8 on the list by the VA linked to Capitol Inn? And he said, quite candidly, well, there were some on the list passed by Congress that shouldn't have been on the list. In other words, there really wasn't sufficient medical proof. So that's a pretty fascinating statement or admission.
Yeah, David, he also said, if my memory is correct, a lot of that legislation was like so much that happens, whether it's in business or or in law, it was part of a compromise, and that the people who were putting the legislation forward were saying, well, it's almost like playing cards, we'll give you this, but you got to take back that. And at the end of the day, that was the legislation that got signed into law by the President Obama.
But
it's not that scientific. we'll throw this to you, but you got to give us back that. And at the end of the day, yes, some of the veterans are being well served, but in the end, are they truly being well served? And the answer, as far as I'm concerned, is probably not, which is just so typical.
Well, I think another way of looking at it is those covered by the 2012 law, there are people covered by that for health care that arguably the science wasn't strong enough, but that as part of the compromise to get the law passed, enough members of Congress said, okay, let's just leave those in there. In other words, let's err on the side of being more generous to the families of these veterans. That's another way of looking at it, that there was supposed to be science behind all of it. And in fact, when they started, it was because there was some evidence. And the question is, how strong the evidence is it? What's the standard of proof that they need to have to put something on the list? Well, it's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, like in a criminal case. Certainly isn't that. It's not even close to that. But I remember back probably 10 years ago when I was first reading, maybe longer than 10 years ago, but first reading about the stories about Camp Lejeune, the stories that got into the media, the newspaper articles, et cetera, were stories of male veterans from the Marine Corps that developed male breast cancer, which is relatively rare. Certainly, it's nowhere as common as female breast cancer. But so the idea was that they did studies and they found their statistics that there was a higher incidence of male breast cancer associated with veterans, Marines who had served at Camp Lejeune. Well, male breast cancer ended up on the list on the 2012 Act. It did not make the cut 5 years later, when the VA developed its presumptive list for disability compensation, which I thought was pretty interesting or pretty odd, that the one cancer that got the most attention initially and really brought Lejeune issues to the forefront never made it on the final list. But in any event, let me just quickly go over the list of these 15 conditions, because even though there's a difference in those two lists, The list of 8 from 2017 are for disability compensation or payment purposes. The list of 15 are from the 2012 law dealing with health care. So a veteran or family member may still be eligible for health care for any of these 15 conditions, even if one or more of these conditions did not end up on the list of 8 from 2017. So here's the list of 15 that will make a veteran who served at Lejeune or New River Air Station and their family members get health benefits. That includes urinary, bladder cancer, breast cancer, esophageal cancer, female infertility, hepatic steatosis, kidney cancer, leukemia, lung cancer, miscarriage, multiple myeloma, mild dysplastic syndromes, neurobehavioral effects, which, as a side note, is another one that did not make the list of 8 in 2017. non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, renal toxicity, which did not make the list in 2017, and scleroderma. So if a veteran or family member develops any of these 15 conditions, they may still be eligible for health care benefits. You may be asking, well, how do they apply for those health care benefits? Well, there's forms for everything. You know, the VA is like the IRS. They've got forms for about everything you can imagine. And you can go to the VA website, look under benefits, and you'll find links, or type in their search engine, Camp Lejeune, and it'll bring you eventually to the forms you need to apply for Camp Lejeune health care coverage. Those of you that may be really interested, that's the VA Form 10-168. That's VA Form 10-10068. You can either fill it in online, or you can download it and fax or mail it into the VA, and that's for health care benefits. You'll need, eventually, the VA will need to be convinced by way of evidence of the proof of relationship to the veteran who served on active duty for at least 30 days at Lejeune during that time frame, proof they lived at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River for at least 30 days from August of 53 through December of 87, and that proof of living at Camp Lejeune is not necessarily as easy as you might think, because we're talking about something that could be, you know, more than 60 years ago. And that may not end up in service records where you lived. It might be that, yeah, you were assigned there, but who's to say that you weren't, you know, the VA may say, where's the proof you were living there as opposed to out in the civilian community? So they'll look at records, base housing records, perhaps orders that show anything. Be creative if necessary. Medical records also are necessary to show that the person has one of the 15 conditions listed that I've mentioned, and then there has to be a treating physician report. Another VA form needs to be completed by a doctor. So there's a lot there. I know I've just given you a tremendous amount of detailed information. Good news is the VA's website has that and more. So over to you, Richard.
Well, that's another great summary of another very difficult and troubling issue regarding our Camp Lejeune veterans and the water contamination that they experienced. David, you're on a roll here, giving our listeners some great professorial analysis of various issues affecting our men and women and veterans. What about veterans who served in the Southwest Asian theater of military operations? What illnesses or other conditions are related to their service in that region?
That's a really good question, because, you know, I hear from veterans all the time asking about the Agent Orange presumption from Vietnam, and we hear more and more lately about the Camp Lejeune contamination, but they don't realize, and these are even veterans that served in Southwest Asia, you know, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, some of the other countries in that area, Afghanistan, what they call Southwest Asia. Now the VA has certain presumptions as well. Now, what's interesting is that what we've talked about so far as Agent Orange and Camp Lejeune, are human-caused contamination, pollution, right? Well, most of the presumptions, in fact, I'd say all the presumptions right now about Southwest Asia, at least all the clear presumptions. There are some other things that are being battled out, like the burn pits that we've talked about so often in past shows, which is human-caused environmental pollution. But in Southwest Asia, you know, we're talking about basically third-world countries for the most part, or conditions that may be third-world in nature. In other words, undeveloped, a lot of bacterial kinds of infections. So here's the list. The VA will presume that these infectious diseases, which I'm going to list for you in a moment, that they're related to military service if a veteran served in Southwest Asia theater of operation, either during the Gulf War, which is what, that's another term for Operation Desert Shield and Operation Desert Storm. In other words, from August 2nd, 1990, all the way to the present time, that they served in Southwest Asia, like Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Oman, you know, some of those other countries in that area. Or if they served in Afghanistan on or after September 19, 2001. And that was the date when, you know, we started sending some troops in after the 9/11 attacks in 2001. But here's the list where the VA will say that if veterans have developed these diseases within certain time frames, and then they have a current disability as opposed to a disability that might have healed, they might have recovered from totally with no residual effects, the VA will presume that these diseases are service-connected, and they'll rate them accordingly and pay the veteran disability compensation. Well, here's the list. Malaria, which is an infectious disease caused by a parasite transmitted by mosquitoes. Symptoms include chills, fevers, sweats. It must be at least 10% disabling within 1 year from the date of military separation or at a time when standard and accepted treatises indicated the incubation period began during a qualifying period of military service. So that's kind of a complicated definition, but it basically means that the symptoms must have shown to occur within a relatively short period of time. Another on this list of presumed Southwest Asia diseases is brucellosis, which is a bacterial disease with symptoms such as profuse sweating and joint and muscle pain. This illness may be chronic. It can persist for years. The rule is it must be at least 10% disabling within 1 year from the date of military separation. Another one is Campylobacter jejuni, which is a rather strange name, but it's basically a disease with symptoms such as abdominal pain, diarrhea, and fever. It must be at least 10% disabling within 1 year from the date of military separation. Another one is called Q fever. It has a more complicated name, but the short name is Q fever. It's another bacterial disease common in that area of the world. Symptoms, fever, severe headaches, gastrointestinal conditions, nausea, diarrhea, all those sorts of fun things. In chronic cases, the illness may cause inflammation of the heart even, so that's a secondary disability. It must be at least 10% disabling within 1 year of the date of military separation. Mycobacterium tuberculosis is another one on the list. It primarily affects lungs and causes symptoms such as chest pain, persistent cough, weight loss, and fever. Non-typhoid salmonella, another condition. A lot of these are gastrointestinal in nature. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea must exhibit itself within 1 year at a 10% rating. Shigella, another condition. Characterized by vomiting, nausea, diarrhea. Gives you some idea of what the living conditions are like in that part of the world, that these are relatively common conditions or diseases that you'll see in that part of the world that are relatively unknown here in the United States. Another one is visceral leishmaniasis, which is a parasitic disease. Characterized by symptoms such as fever, weight loss, enlargement of the spleen, liver, and anemia. It can be fatal if left untreated. And if you're really interested in gory details, go to the VA website, read more about this and other diseases, and then do further research, and you'll see this is pretty tough, painful things to have to endure. And then the last on the list is West Nile virus. Many of you may have heard about that. It's the disease spread by mosquitoes. Symptoms are fever, headache, muscle pain, weakness, nausea, vomiting. Symptoms can vary from being relatively mild to very severe. Again, they must have exhibited themselves at least 10% disabling within 1 year of separation from the military. So those are actually things that you don't hear a lot about, but the men and women of our armed forces are exposed to this sort of stuff when they're serving in that part of the world. The VA has recognized that and paid, paying compensation according. So I remember when I was stationed in Saudi Arabia in 1992, Not saying I was exposed to any of these things, but what was sort of interesting was that I was stationed at a place called Colbar Towers. It was basically a compound, and it was the same place that in 1996 it was the target of a terrorist bombing. But in any event, my point with this example is that the food that was served there was prepared in these modular buildings, like mobile homes, and they were prepared by locals, and they were contracted out. And what was amazing was how frequently there would be widespread bouts of diarrhea and other gastrointestinal problems that would affect large numbers of the people stationed there. And of course, when everyone was getting this stuff, you were wondering, hey, are we being poisoned by the locals who don't want us to be there anyway, or was it because of just the bacteria and other things which are maybe more common in food and water in that part of the world? Who knows? It certainly wasn't a pleasant thing. But in any event, there's a lot more
to
these. I know we're about running out of time here. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I got a good question for you. It was texted to me during your analysis of the South Asian conditions. This limitation regarding the it must be 10% disabling within 1 year of the date of the military separation. This one veteran said that, he started getting these conditions after that 1 year, and it's been a dogfight, and we don't represent this person. And he's been making some headway with it. So can you give us a brief analysis that, is it a crippling thing? Is it a slam the door shut?
If the symptoms on the condition, we're about out of time, so I'll be really brief. But the presumptive for many of these conditions requires that the condition be at least 10% disabling within 1 year of the date of military separation. So that's not to completely slam the door shut to say that it's impossible to service-connect the condition if it developed at a 10% rating or higher 3 years later, for instance. It's just that what you're going to need most likely is a really convincing medical statement from a doctor with a convincing rationale. The rationale is as important than the bottom line conclusion. So, I wouldn't say it completely slams the door shut. It does make it, knowing the VA, it makes it a lot tougher. So we're about running out of time tonight. So, Rick, why don't you remind our listeners about the Coaching into Care program before we have to close out?
Absolutely. Before we do close tonight, I'd like to provide our weekly reminder to the veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. Toll free 1-800-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, Dave.
Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll please tune in next week, same time, same stage, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, hope you enjoy the 4th of July, which is this Wednesday, and that you have a great rest of the week. Good night.
And Have a safe 4th of July, everybody. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.